Turn to Genesis chapter number 10 to get started. I've got, I'd say, about two or three different places for us to look tonight. And this is probably going to be more along the lines of teaching maybe than preaching, but we'll just pray that the Lord would add the increase where it's needed. And as I begin to study today, I started out by praying that the Lord would show me what He'd have for our church, for me and for our church. And it's kind of an interesting study that was presented to me, and just excited about it because it's some of the things that we see. I remember in school, they covered so many things that was just so wonderful, and I wanted to take the time then to study them and didn't have the time. It was going so fast, but this here, it's neat how the Lord brings things out to you and how He applies it to your life, how you can see the influence of different things that happened so many years ago, but how you can see a lot of the same things in our life here today. Just so many different things. And God didn't put anything in the Bible by mistake. There's nothing left out. It's all in there for a purpose. Everything we read in the Bible is for a purpose. I honestly don't understand a lot of the things I've seen, a lot of things that I've read and I study. I trust it. I trust it all, but I don't understand it all. But when I find something in the Bible, I know it's there for a reason. And tonight, I just simply want to teach or talk about, for a little while, Nineveh, the city of Nineveh. You know, it's something that we talk about in passing when you think about Jonah, when you think about his calling and the things that he had to do, but I never really took the time or studied it out to see how it coincides with the book of Nahum. And it's kind of an interesting study when you look at it. But right here in Genesis chapter number 10, verses 8 through 11, this is where you find the foundation. This is the beginning of Nineveh. This is where it started. In verse number 8 it says, "And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Uruk, and Akkad, and Calneh, and the land of Shinar. Out of that land went forth Ashur, and builded Nineveh, and the city of Rehoboth, and Calah." So we see here, all the way back in Genesis, we see where Nineveh got its start. I just kind of studying, getting some foundation things. There's just a few places I want to turn. So if you will, let's go ahead and turn over to Jonah chapter number 1. Jonah chapter number 1. And while you're turning, Nimrod was the founder. Come on down to Ashur, which is of the Assyrians. And the Assyrians are very evil people. They were known for how evil that they were. And Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire. And to give you an idea about the size of it, it wasn't a tremendous place in size. It's probably bigger than what we're used to seeing around here, maybe. But it's about 3 miles long, and it was less than a mile and a half wide. And it had a wall about 8 miles in length that surrounded it. And to give you an idea, if you're up on geography or things like that, it's about the size of New York City, or the city that complexes around New York City, to give you an idea about the size of it. Right here in Jonah chapter number 1, this is around the year of 760 B.C. This is kind of, I guess, maybe a little bit of a history lesson, but this is 760 B.C. is when we're seeing this story take place here with Jonah. Let me switch over. Verses 1 and 2, it says here, it says, "Now the word of the Lord came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness is come up before me." And as we go through Jonah, I'm just going to briefly go through a few things here. This is very common. This is something that we're used to hearing. Ungle's Bible Dictionary, it says, just to give you an idea about how wicked or how evil that Nineveh or the Assyrians that lived there were, it says, "The pages of history are nowhere more bloody than in records of their wars. throughout history, and I didn't have enough time to really go in depth as far as a lot of the Assyrian history, but what I briefly read speaks about how evil they were. The dismemberment of the people that they had fought and just many different things. They didn't do it just to fight. They would send a message to whoever they were against. They had that reputation of being an evil people. And so back before, you know, when I used to study about Jonah, and I think I may even mention this here before or found it out when we were talking about it earlier in school, I remember just thinking that Jonah was a coward, or Jonah was running from the Lord. You know, he wasn't answering his call to preach because he was afraid of getting in front of people. He was shy. You know, I didn't understand exactly why he did not want to do this so much. And then when I found out who that he was sent to minister to, made a lot more sense to me. I remember thinking about this today. I was thinking, what if the Lord said, Jason, I want you to go to the Islamic nation, and I want you to cry against their city. You know, in our day and time, the Muslims and Islam, there's this fear between Christians and the Islamic nation. You know, and I was going to look and see, and I see all the passports were gone, the passport registration that the missionary had here the other day. But I was thinking, you know, how would that be? How would I feel if God said, Jason, that's where you're going? That's where you're taking your family, your wife and your son. Would you just automatically just go? You know, I've given Jonah a hard time in the past just thinking about that. But when I really see what he was faced, it made more sense to me. When you really think about it and bring it down to your level today, what would that be like? And by no means, the Assyrians were no friend to the Hebrews. And the little brief outline of Jonah, I just want to go through this to show you where it ends up when we get to the book of Nahum. And the first thing we see with Jonah, we see him fleeing. He ran because of how evil Nineveh was. It wasn't that he was just against them. It wasn't that he didn't. It's they were against him, his people. He didn't know if he was going to go in there and they were going to kill him. He didn't know what kind of wickedness he would face. I mean, if you look at something like that as one person going to a nation, realistically, what do you think that you could accomplish? As one person, you know, this is talking about Jonah being sent. The first thing we see with him, sent by himself, the first thing we see is Jonah fleeing. Then we see Jonah praying. He was placed in the fish, and we know that story. And young people, there's a lot of things in here for you. Pay very close attention to this. A lot of times when we go through these things really fast, I don't think we get the impact of it. One of the things I read also today is how there's three different ways to look at the book of Jonah, and one of those was just hypothetically. I saw a thing on a movie clip that was talking about Jonah, or talking about Noah, I believe it was. Do you really believe that he existed? And people say, well, I think it was just a parable. I think it was just something that was made up to tell a story so people could kind of see the good message behind it, but there was no truth to it. But Jonah was a real person. He was here just like you and I are here tonight. And when we see this and we see how the Lord took his situation, he put Jonah in a literal fish. It's hard for me to imagine. I've seen shows on TV, Shark Week, you know, that's a common big fish type of show, or National Geographic. And it's hard to imagine that a person could live under those circumstances, in those conditions. But our God is big. Our God puts us through all kinds of different situations. You think about things that you have faced here in this church, different things, when you look at it, that you know that you could not have gotten through that had it not been for God. He's supernatural. When we see these things, we need to understand how big that is. Well, the things that we face in our life, they're big too. The different challenges we face, the different crises we face, that's just as big to us as it was for Jonah. And you see how God placed him in this situation by himself. And you know, to us, we would think being placed in a big fish, that'd be scary, that'd be dangerous, or that's going to kill us. But that was the safest place for Jonah to be. It was him and God. He had him where he could talk to God, where he could listen. He was no longer running. And Jonah finally got to the point that he understood that he had to pray. And that's exactly what he began to do. He began praying when God placed him in that well. And after that, he began preaching. After he came out, he began preaching. And he started proclaiming God's judgment. You know, when you think about different things, if you're not so willing to do what God has placed in your heart, he can definitely get you to the place that you wish you would have just done it. You know, when I look at different situations, like tonight, I'll give you just a little example, just a baby example. You know, I knew that there's supposed to be a business meeting tonight, and when I saw the text from Preacher Wynn, I got nervous because I was thinking about the business meeting. I was thinking, well, you know, preaching is one thing, but that business meeting. And he said, we'll postpone the business meeting. I was immediately relieved. Whew, I could kind of take a breath. You know, that's a small thing. You know, so, okay, we can handle this. God can put us in different situations to see these things in our life. If you think, you know, this is bad, you know, I think about me and Brandy were talking, you know, about life in general. You just say things. I would change this in life. If we just had more money, you know, that we would change that. We would have more money, or we would have this. And immediately, all I could think about is, wait, you better thank God for what you have, what you've already got. Not things that you want more, but things that you already have. What if you didn't have your health and you had more money? And you was using that money to pay for doctor bills? See, things aren't always greener on the other side. But after Jonah, after he was allowed to leave the fish, he began preaching. And then the fourth thing that's kind of covered through here, this is just an outline. Jonah began learning. You know, when I was looking at Jonah's life, even after all the things that he had been through, I couldn't imagine going to a city and that entire city repenting and coming to know Jesus as their Savior. The whole city, it speaks of it in like the greater part of it, if not all, the greater part of it repented. And one person went and preached like the Lord told him to, and that's what happened. I would count that as a victory. But Jonah started pouting. This is where I look at Jonah and say, could you not see this portion of it? He goes over and he sits on the bank. And he starts watching. He's waiting for this city just to be destroyed. He's waiting on it. And God reveals himself to him. Jonah gets hot, and he here comes the gourd to cover him up. All these different things. And Jonah said he was mad unto death. I mean, he was mad. He was upset. He wasn't just a little angry. He was upset over what he had saw. But instead of Jonah, he sought God's judgment. That's what he wanted to see happen. You know, and when I was thinking about this portion here, I'm thinking about what I see here today. In politics, in different things, locally, all the way to the national level. We keep on asking ourselves, Lord, when are you going to do something? What's going on here? Why are these people getting away with this continually? Why is there no judgment? Why does the evil, why does it seem to persist and just get worse with no halting? But you know, the neat thing I saw here was Jonah sought judgment, but God had mercy. And I keep thinking about my life and where I was before I was saved. And I know I was young, but lost is lost. And I was just thinking about how God had mercy on me. I see so many different people, even here in our county, that are in bad shape. Financially, spiritually, down on their luck, they have nobody to turn to. I know of a fella that pretty much hops from apple cart station to apple cart station, and that's where he lives. That's where he sleeps. That's where he stays. And me and some of the officers that were working that night that was trying to help him, we just looked at each other, and had it not been for the grace of God, that could have been any one of us. God's mercy is amazing. And when I look here at Jonah chapter 3 and verse 10. Read a few verses, or read this verse here. And God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil that he had said that he would do unto them, and he did it not. God chose to give them mercy. When they turned, when they repented, God gave them mercy. God forgave them. And some of the things here that Jonah got to see during all this situation, he got to see the calming of the sea before the crew lost their lives. Back when he was on the ship, when he was running before being cast in the sea, he got to see the calming of the sea. The provision of the great fish and the preservation of Jonah. He got to see what it was like to be, I don't know of anybody else in history. Maybe there is, but I don't know of anybody else that's ever been in a fish and came out of it alive. I don't know. If there is, I've never heard of it. He's one of a kind. In my book, that's the only one I've ever seen that. Some of the things he's experienced, you know, some of the situations you're going through are just as important as this in your life. And then after that, Jonah was placed on dry land. There's a lot in the Bible about dry land. When you think about the Israelites and how they crossed on dry land, God knows how to put you in a safe place. And then he saw the vine prepared. That seems awful small, but that's what he needed at that time. That's what was on his mind, that was his need, and that's what was provided. And then he saw the worm eat the vine. He saw the wind come and blow it away. And then he also saw the salvation of the Ninevites. All these different things that he was the one chosen to go and do this. Nobody else, it was him. And when you look at these different situations, had it been somebody else, these other things may have been something else for their lives. See, you and I face different things. We all don't face the exact same challenges. We all have different things. See, God knows our very being. He knows how to get my attention. And your attention might be completely different than mine. You know, I am so amazed at how he can do that. He knows me. And when I was thinking about this and comparing us to Jonah and the things that he went through, has the Lord worked miracles in your life? Has he done anything in your life that you can look back and say, the Lord done this? Has he been preparing you for things to come? You know, when I think about that a whole lot over my life, when I look back and see just the recent events of every bit of that has a reason. God didn't do that just, well, let's see what he does. I want to poke at him. I want to pick at him. I want to see if this makes him mad. God does everything for a reason. He knows what we are going to face in the future. He's already there. But there's things we have to face to get to that point. And I know we don't always understand that. You know, when I thought about Jonah and the vine and the worm and the wind and all those things, I don't think he understood what all that meant at that time. But I think looking back, he probably had a better understanding about his position with God. You know, I just can't express, you know, when you think about until you have a greater understanding of who your Creator is, some of these things are just not going to make sense. You have to trust him. You have to trust that what you are facing right now is for your betterment. And I know that's hard. I know that's a hard thing to face, but do we trust him? If we trust him and if we love him, all things work for good. That's a lot in a verse. Let's turn over to the book of Nahum for just a minute. And I'm going to try to hurry on here. You know, when we take that account, and for me, that's where Nineveh in my mind ended. I honestly, until studying further, I thought everything ended on a good note. And rightfully so. I mean, look what all happened. Look at all the things that he had to go through just to get to the point of finally seeing their salvation, but then he wasn't really even excited about it. He wasn't content with that. But all those things he had to go through. And then we go to the book of Nahum. And it starts out in verse number 1. I'm going to read verses 1 through 8. says, the burden of Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum, the Ecclesiite. God is jealous, and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. And this verse number 3 here, this is the key verse of the book of Nahum. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power, and will not at all acquit the wicked. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind, and in the storm, and in the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebuketh the sea, and marketh it dry, and drieth it up all the rivers. Bashan languisheth, and Carmel, and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. The mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is burned at his presence. Yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by him. In verse number 7, the Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. But hath an overrunning flood will make an utter end of the place thereof, and darkness shall pursue his enemies. He's talking about the city of Nineveh. But one of the things there in verse number 7, you know, I have to learn every day because I face new challenges. If I've been through a certain situation before and I can say, God delivered me from this, I can go back to that and say, he'll deliver me again. I've experienced that. I've seen that. He done it before, and I know he can do it again. But this here says that the Lord, he knoweth them that trust in him. What about the new challenge that you're going to face tomorrow that you don't know anything about yet? Do you trust him enough to know that he's going to take care of you? The Lord knows. He already knows. He knows. And all the attributes that you can see here, he's slow to anger. All the things that he's shown, and he showed toward Nineveh, and then what he showed toward you and I. Everybody that's saved, that's the same compassion he showed toward you and I. And the thing here, it says, Nahum, this is the word Nahum, it means the comforter, the consolation. And this here, when you read that, I don't see how people would take that into consolation, but it's written to Judah. And being an enemy of Judah, the consolation comes to Judah as that the Lord is going to take care of this. You know, I asked you the question a while ago, Lord, how long are you going to let this go? Are these people that are doing these evil and wicked things, are they just going to get away with it? The Bible says that what I just read here earlier, he's not going to acquit the wicked. They're going to get theirs. This book here, it takes place, the book of Nahum, it takes place between 66 B.C. and 612 B.C. That's a span of 51 years. So think about, I was thinking about this, and I won't ask anybody to raise their hand, but if you're here 50 years old or older, this is something that you could have seen take place in your lifetime, this account right here. So that's something to think about. We're not talking about a span of 1,000 or 2,000 years like some of the things that have happened, but this is a relatively short period of time. And to give you another idea of how it was, like we were talking about with Jonah, which took place back in 760 B.C., Jonah was written and took place 148 years just prior to what we're talking about here, 148 years. So we're not talking about that long a period of time, and I'll go into that a little bit further. And the destruction of Nineveh is outlined in the book of Nahum, and it's given to Judah. The beginning, we see the theme and the author, which Nahum is the author. Second part, we see the majesty of God, chapter 1, verses 2 to 14. Then you see the judgment that's proclaimed. I want to read a few verses here. Verse 1 and 15 says, behold, upon the mountains, the feet of him that bringeth good tidings and publisheth peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee. He is utterly cut off. And that's God's promise to Judah, what he's getting ready to do. Verses on down here, I want to read verses, chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. It says, "Woe to the bloody city! It is all full of lies and robbery. The prey departeth not. The noise of a whip and the noise of the rattling of the wheels and of the prancing horses and of the jumping chariots. The horseman lifteth up both the bright sword and the glittering spear, and there is a multitude of slain and a great number of carcasses, and there is none end of their corpses. They stumble upon their corpses because of the multitude of the whoredoms of the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcrafts that selleth nations through her whoredoms and families through their witchcrafts." You see, this is the evil part. This is Nineveh. This is the same city that we were just talking about, that Jonah had visited. This is a completely different side that, when I recall thinking about Nineveh, I've always thought, well, they all got saved and Jonah done the right thing finally. And they all repented and they were saved. And I see how just in a short period of time, all that had changed. Every bit of that had changed. We see here Nineveh had been converted through Jonah's preaching about 148 years before. Nineveh did not pass along their knowledge of God to their children. And I'll go ahead and say this here. When I was looking at this and thinking about it, I was going to end with this, but I want to go ahead and say this now. I was thinking about the generations that I'm a part of right now. And as far as I know, my grandmother, my grandma Mad, she is the oldest member of my family. And the best that we can tell, I was asking Dad, I went back to him, and he told me that she was born in 1921. So you have the 20s. And then my parents born in the 50s. I was born in the 70s. And Josh, he's born in the 2000s. So I see the four generations that I have in my lifetime. And I was looking at Josh and my grandmother, and there's a difference there of 81 years apart from her birth to his birth. That's 81 years. So if Josh was to live up to 70, that's 150 years. So you see how quickly generations can come to pass. We're talking about from the time that Jonah, they had the great revival in Nineveh, to the time that we're talking about their destruction and complete utter destruction, 150 years. That's something that a family of generations could see. Just that's very small. That's a very close period of time. And I see it says here, just a few notes that I took. Nineveh fell back into how they used to be. They destroyed Samaria, the northern kingdom of Israel, in 722 B.C. and almost captured Jerusalem in 701 B.C. Nineveh was destroyed almost because, as this right here, go ahead and read a few more verses because there's something I don't want to leave out. If we'll read verses 11 through 19 here in chapter 3 of Nahum. It says, Thou also shalt be drunken, thou shalt be hid, thou also shalt seek strength because of the enemy. All thy strongholds shall be like fig trees with the first stripe figs. They shall be shaken. They shall even fall into the mouth of the eater. Behold, thy people in the midst of thee are women. The gates of thy land shall be set wide open unto thine enemies. The fire shall devour thy bars. Draw thee waters for the siege. Fortify thy strongholds. Go into the clay and tread the mortar. Make strong the bricklin. See here, there's a lot. The water in this city was going to be turned loose on them. Most of the buildings and things they had were made of brick. So when the water was going to be turned loose, it's just going to come through like it would with sand. Just as it would with sand. Draw the waters for the siege. Fortify thy strongholds. Go into the clay and tread the mortar. Make strong the bricklin. There shall the fire devour thee. The sword shall cut thee off. And it shall eat thee up like the cankerworm. Make thyself many as the cankerworm. Make thyself many as the locust. Thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars of the heaven, and the cankerworm spoileth and fleeth away. Thy crowned are as the locust, and thy captains as the great grasshoppers which camp in the hedges to the cold day. But when the sun ariseth, they flee away, and their place is not known where they are. Verse 18, thy shepherds slumber, O king of Assyria. Thy nobles shall dwell in the dust. Thy people is scattered upon the mountains, and no man gathereth them. There is no healing of thy bruise. Thy wound is grievous. All that hear the bruit of thee shall clap the hands over thee. For upon whom hath not any wickedness passed continually? And you see the judgment that has passed and the prophecy that has came to be. But there in verse 17, one of the things I read that I thought was very interesting is that Nineveh was so destroyed, it almost became as a myth. That's what was read, that's what I read in a dictionary about this. And when I read back over verse 17, it said, and their place is not known where they are. I mean, that just shows how utterly and completely God destroyed that city. And we're talking about a time of 150 years. And I was just thinking about us here locally, just the time that we live in, our county, where we live, and what that would be like that if we had a 150-year period that we let things go, that we did not try to do just the very same things here that Nineveh, you know, they had this great revival, and they turned away and they forgot God. They let it go over a course of 150 years, and it's like the city never existed except for what we read here in the Bible and what records were kept historically. And just quickly here, and I'm going to finish up, just a few things just to think about, is our responsibility to share the gospel, our testimonies, the miracles the Lord has performed in our lives. It's important for me to share with Josh the importance of the things that he's experienced, the things that he's seen. There's a lot of things he's young and didn't understand exactly what all was going on the past few years, but it's important that he understand what that means. It's not enough just, and we say these things, it's not enough to let Sunday school handle it, let school handle it, or just get what he gets from the preacher. It's important that our kids know about things that we have been through. You know, I know some parents are quite a bit older than some children. There's a lot of water that's been under the bridge, and there's a lot of things that's happened before that child was born, and things they have no clue that you as a parent, you as a person, has experienced. But it's important that we share those things with them. It's important that they don't just see us as a parent, that they just see us as, you know, you're the boss and whatever you say goes, but let them understand why you are the way you are. What did God bring you through? When we go back to Jonah and see all the different things, what a testimony he had that he could share with his family. This is what I went through before I went to Nineveh. It's important that God, that our children see the relationship that we have with God, not as something that's not obtainable, not that something that's black and white, but it's something that's real, something that you can share with your children and say, this is what God did for me, and he can do it for you. Also, it is our responsibility to stand in spite of fear, knowing it is what God has called us to do. Just like Jonah, the fear, that had to be an amazing amount of fear. I know with everything that's been going on and just the little election and all those kind of things, it's amazing what you will face, even in your home county. There are lines that are drawn. There are people that don't like you because you are a Christian. And you can say, yeah, I know that, but I'm telling you, there's people that don't know anything else about you other than you have the title of Christian, and automatically they don't like you. The lines are drawn here. This isn't just kind of off in the distance. It's already here. And you're made out to be some kind of crazy person. It's amazing to me, if you witness to people and talk to people about salvation, they'll be so quick to say, yes, I'm saved. Yes, I know the Lord, I'm saved. And then you'll talk to them about something in the Bible, say, well, you know, the Bible, it also says this, and they'll turn you off and they'll hate you automatically because of that. Only because you're just trying to say, well, this is what the Bible says. Did you not read the verses and the conviction that you had to get to salvation? Was that not real? Then this is real as well, but there's people, they don't have that same standard. They'll make you out to be literally like you're a crazy person and try to make you feel stupid for what you believe in. And that's a real thing. And I think about our kids more so even than myself. You know, I growing up, and you take your knocks and you learn things and you learn to be tough-skinned. But I worry about my kids. I worry about our kids, our children, because they're a lot softer-hearted than a lot of older people are. They need a prayer. They need the understanding. They need to be talked to and explained. You know, you're not crazy because you believe in the Bible. You're a step ahead. And it's not a matter of trying to be like Jonah and just saying, you know, there's not going to be this time. I was thinking about this today. There's not going to be this time during the rapture where we're going to sit there and say, ha, told you so. Told you he was coming. Told you so. There's no bragging rights. It's a pitiful shape. Because we're gone, we're gone. Then they'll know. And that's why our job is so important right now. These people that I tell you, I care about them. And they don't want to see it that way. They see you as a hindrance. They see you as something that's in the way that needs to be pushed out of the way, by all means. But they don't understand the burden and the love and the care that goes behind it, even for their own betterment, for themselves. They don't understand that. And this here, just one more thing. It is our responsibility to educate ourselves, not only in God's Word, but in what is going on around us, and teach our children. There's a lot of different things you see, you know, and I'm not up on it. I've not studied it out, but this moon situation, all these things that we're seeing, people have questions about it. People, what does that mean? You're a preacher, what does that mean? I don't have all the answers. I admit that to you. But it's so important that we get involved with what is really going on. There's all kinds of case laws, all kinds of little lawsuits and little things that are going on. And as these little things happen, it changes our entire case law. And when the next judge gets it, when the next judge gets a case in front of him, and they have this case, this person versus this person, and it was ruled this way, a lot of times they tend to say, okay, well, that's the way it was ruled. I'm going to do the same thing. It was in their opinion that this is what was the right thing to do. And so, and as you get more liberal, that's how our society goes. That's why you see so many people that's committed some heinous crimes that's out walking on the streets. And see, we are so desensitized now that when you see that, oh, well, yeah, I saw that on TV. Yeah, that's bad, but until it happens to you, then it becomes real. And that's the hard part. As things progress, all these things matter. All these things come to be. And I was just thinking the other night, we got to go to a meeting with all kinds of candidates. It was hours, 2 or 3 hours of speeches from candidates. And I'm talking just 2 or 3 minute, 5 minute speeches. And I told Brandy, I said, you know, the scary thing about tonight is had we not been going through what we're going through, we wouldn't even have been there. But how many people take the time to listen to all those candidates to see what they really mean? Not just because there's an R or a D or an I in front of their name, you really don't know. That doesn't tell you everything about that person. It is so important that we know who these people are to take the time. I admit, I'd never understood how important it is until just recently, because you kind of take some things for granted, but you can't. Because as you get to know people, you say, well, they're this, but they're pretty... I never thought that it would have been that they would have gone for that. So it's important to know these people. It's important to get in touch with who these people are. And I'll go ahead and end with that now. And when.